Hello and welcome to another edition of the In Context podcast. Today I have a good friend of mine. It's Steve Neal of Oldham Bethel Church. How are you doing, Steve?
I'm all right, mate. You okay?
I'm good. I forgot to mention, and podcaster and blogger at Building Jerusalem. And I also forgot to mention, and future employee of Medhurst Ministries.
All right.
Am I allowed to say that, brother?
You can say that now. I think it's out there. I think it's public.
Yeah. Cool. So first of all, Steve, what I wanted to do was just introduce to our 10 weekly listeners the reason why you're actually going to join Medhurst Ministries. So just share a little bit for those who don't know you, who you are, what you've done, what you've been doing up until recently, and why you think you'll be a good addition to the Medhurst team.
Yeah, so the last 12 years I've been working in an area of Oldham called Glodick. Glodick's over 90% South Asian area, so almost exclusively Pakistani Muslim in its makeup. But immediately round about us are working class white council estates as well, in St. Mary's and in Fitton Hill, and then we're right on the edge of the town centre. So we reach into two different communities, really. So sort of South Asian Muslim, and then white working class people. We're quite a diverse church, which has, you know, changed in its makeup over the last 12 years, really. So yeah, I've been doing a lot of work in deprived and multicultural contexts. I've been involved in Medhurst for a number of years now, where we've served, we've engaged with everything that they're doing. We believe in what Medhurst are doing. Fundamentally, we want to see churches like ours supported. We want to see people who have largely been missing from the UK church brought into the church and trained and raised up to positions of leadership. We don't want to do that at the expense of the people who are already there. We want to do that together with them, so that you don't end up with almost two-tier churches. I think you see it a lot in multi-ethnic churches, where that is what they are. They're multi-ethnic, but they're not really multicultural, where you might have people of different cultures in the room and people with different ethnicities in the room, but very often you either ask them to assimilate to the majority culture, or you treat their culture as lesser and it doesn't get a voice in the church. And what we really want to see is multicultural churches where you can have upper, middle and working class people together. You can have people from different ethnicities and cultural backgrounds, and they can all be together with a similar voice. And I believe that's what Medhurst is really exists to do. It's there to support, to train, to finance, to encourage the planting and ongoing ministry of existing churches in forgotten places. And really, that's what I've been doing over the last 12 years. We've done a bit of work planting another church in Rochdale, which is very similar to Oldham. So we want to see churches planted, and we think Medhurst is a good vehicle for supporting and planting churches and training the wider church in how they can be doing that in their own areas.
Cool. So before we understand how Medhurst has been a help for you as a pastor of a church, share a little bit about your context. Some of you've shared about the context of where the church is situated, but share a little bit about the demographics within the church and some of the challenges and blessings that you've faced over the years as a pastor in a multi-ethnic town.
Yeah, so when I started, the church was predominantly white, but there were some Iranian folks who were in the church. We then shifted towards being sort of 50% white and Iranian. Then over time, we've added to that Nigerians and Cameroonians and people from other ethnic backgrounds as well. The makeup of the church has changed in the time I've been there. Some of that happened quite early on, to be honest. So some of those moves have been, we've gained more people leaving African Pentecostal backgrounds, particularly leaving sort of health, wealth, prosperity backgrounds, as they've engaged with like the gospel teaching of the church. They've either read the Bible themselves and gone, what I'm hearing in my own church isn't right, or they've encountered other stuff and come to realize what they're hearing isn't right, and then they've looked for a Bible teaching church and come to us. Iranians have been jumping into the boat. We've got high levels of asylum seekers, and so we've had a lot of Iranian and Afghan asylum seekers over the years coming to us. And then we've started to get more working class white people as well. So they've been coming off of either council estates or not necessarily living on estates, but in sort of like old terrace mill housing, do you know what I mean? That type of thing. So yeah, that's kind of how the demographics have changed. What else did you ask me? I can't remember.
Yeah, so you've described the makeup of the church, the local community, the people within that community, and the people that make up your church. So, what were some of the challenges that you've faced pastoring a church like that?
Early on, I guess there was overt racism in the church, so we've had to deal with that. So we would literally have people saying, "I don't want these people here. They are ruining our church." I've had people say that to us. I've had people say, "I can't reach Muslim people. I can't reach Asian people," and a variety of reasons, pretty well all of which are just racist. Have been given as to why they can't or won't even attempt to reach Asian people. So I think that was a big issue early on that we had to get over, and to some degree we just had to tell people that A, that is ungodly, that is unbiblical, that is anti the gospel, and we're not going to do that. We've then had issues of trying to integrate working class people into a church that was predominantly run by middle class people and run along middle class norms. So I was one of the only people in the church really from any sort of working class background, and you know, you'd be hard pushed to say I'm like properly working class right now. Do you know what I mean? I've been to university and got degrees and things now, but I've got a working class background. We didn't have many people who were actually working class in the church, and those that we did, it was still dominated by what I'd call middle class norms. So I worked hard to try and push against some of those, but until we actually had working class people in the church, it was very hard to point to very specific things and see and try and help people see. And I'm not even entirely sure they necessarily do see even now. That they were constantly making value judgments about people, about their parenting, about the way they looked, about the way they talked, about the things they were doing, about the choices they were making. Some of which were, I think, biblical things. So I think and may have been legitimate to say that is an outworking of something I don't think is biblical. But an awful lot of which weren't. They were just cultural things that middle class people go, it's an outworking of a biblical principle, but it's not the outworking, and it's not the only thing, and it doesn't matter. Trying to get people to see and understand that was really difficult. I'm not sure how successful I've even been on that, to be honest. But yeah, trying to get people to see that. My experience with middle class people is they're not bad at seeing cultural difference if you're from Nigeria or you're from Ghana or you're from Pakistan or Bangladesh or China or somewhere like that. We all know they speak a different language, they wear different clothes, they look different, they sound different, they think different, all of that stuff. They are terrible when it comes to English people and going, they will think differently to me because they come from a different region, they come from a different class, they've got a different culture in their area. We just go, oh, they're English, they'll think the same, they'll act the same, there are some basic norms here, and they have no understanding that they've often baptized their own culture and don't recognize it. And I think that's been a major issue for us.
Yeah, no, I hear that. I've seen that, and I've felt that. in other churches, being a working class man in a predominantly middle class church, but I had similar issues as a working class pastor in what was a predominantly white working class church that suddenly receives ethnic minorities, but also middle class Christians coming in. And like, we had to sit and assess ourselves and think, wow, are we judging these middle class Christians coming in the working class dominated church in a similar way to that we were judged as the minority in another church? And how can we adapt to make the middle class feel more welcome? And then also with the influx of Nigerian and Ghanaians that joined, that presented some challenges for myself and the congregation again. And yeah, we've seen a lot of changes over the last year or two, a lot of improvements, but you wonder, is there still a long way to go sometimes? So we've got I think every church struggles, don't they, with different cultures and ethnicities, how we can reflect that manifold wisdom of God in how we show equality and equity amongst one another within the church. But there's external pressures that affect our churches as well, some of which might be finance, people. Even if we have a lot of people, not many of them might be gifted or spiritually mature to help with the running of the church. So what kind of struggles did you have outside the spiritual and cultural issues? What were the more practical issues that you faced?
Yeah, I mean, practically we were a small church with not lots and lots of skills. So there were people very reticent to be trustees or to take on stuff like safeguarding and oversight of things. They're happy to serve, but to take responsibility for stuff and to feel they had the skills and the abilities to do stuff, that's been difficult at times. Funding's always a big issue for churches like ours. So most of the people we were seeing saved were either immigrants in low wage jobs or asylum seekers who weren't allowed to work or white working class people who were on benefits. So we just didn't have people who, would be giving 200, £300 a month to the church. That just wasn't a realistic prospect. It's not to say that we had none of those people, but when you can count the number of people in full-time work on the fingers of one hand, you're going to struggle. So we had to go outside the church to build up support. So one of the reasons why I was blogging before I became a pastor, but I really not frequently and not regularly, and only about bits and pieces that interested me. But one of the reasons I went full tilt at that, so I blog pretty well every day, and still do, and have done that for at least 10 years, if not more, was to try and build up the profile of the church, to try and get us known, to try and build up partnerships so that people who would see what we're doing and hear what we're doing and understand the issues behind what we would do would get behind us and support. So when I was first appointed at the church, I was given the promise of about 3 years. And if nothing changes, we're going to be out of money and we won't be able to support you as a pastor anymore. So I said okay, I'd come on that basis, but I knew I had 3 years to start doing something in order to get the support we needed. So that's been a difficulty because you're constantly pulled between the need to raise funds for your church, which takes time. I've learned that people mainly give to people they trust, and getting people to trust you takes a long time. And because of that, it means that you're pulled between the time pressure of fundraising and the time pressures that every pastor has of trying to write sermons and lead a church and pastor your people and disciple your people and do evangelism in the community. Most people can spend, 90% of their time on that, with a little bit of admin, and they've got people around them to do all the other bits and pieces. I was spending about 40 to 50% of my time just fundraising, just trying to get money in so that we wouldn't sink, and then going, right, I've now got half the time everybody else has got to do a whole load of stuff where I don't have all the support structures around me to do it, everything. So I think time was a major pressure on that. Having funding was a major pressure on us. being able to, and I, when I came to the church, very little was going on. So they ran English classes, and they had their Sunday meetings. That was kind of about it, really. And so I came in trying to start stuff up and get stuff going. And you're trying to start stuff up and run it that's new and adding to your workload, whilst also trying to pick up a load of funding and things like that that other people just aren't thinking about. So that was a big pressure on us. And then just in terms of the church itself, I'd come into a probably a more messy revitalization than I probably thought I was coming into. I knew there were some things, but it was messier and more complex than I thought it'd be. So I was trying to set up structures in the church. So just things like that I would consider to be good order, such as organizing membership properly, organizing baptism properly, organizing elders and deacons, and getting those sorts of things in place. And that again takes time and energy and takes you away from a lot of the things that you'd like to be doing if those things are already in place and working, which by God's grace we got in there relatively early, you know.
Well, when I met you, you'd already found yourself to be a dab hand in that fundraising. You'd raised some funds not only for your own salary but for other workers. You've mentioned that you didn't have much help practically on the ground, so you needed to employ workers. So once you had the funding for workers, was it easy to find them? Because I've had funding in the past, but sadly, I either found myself with people and no money or money and no people. Did you find yourself in a similar situation?
Yeah, broadly, yes. So trying to get the first person was very difficult. But yeah, we got someone in for a time. Then we got put in touch with an American couple. They were the couple who were with us the longest. So they came through a different organization. They came through something called AT3 with us. That fundamentally meant for us we didn't have to organize ourselves to sponsor a visa and that kind of thing. So they came and we had them for 2 years, and then we decided towards the end of those 2 years we'd like to extend their time with us, and they wanted to stay with us a bit longer. So we then set ourselves up as a visa sponsoring organization, and then we raised money to actually employ them. So for the first 2 years they weren't employed by us. For the next 2 years they were. Then they went back to the States. This the only time we've had a very easy time finding somebody, and it was no problem at all, was the lady who came after them. It was through links with them and through her. She'd just come to visit them at one point. We didn't know she was looking to move out of what she was doing at the time anyway. So she was stepping back. And when the couple were going back to America, we wondered whether she would be interested in coming and joining us. That was about the only time we've had an easy transition to a worker. But she was with us fairly short term, and then for various reasons went back to the States. And then, yeah, we haven't had anybody on staff since then. So it's back to me on my own again as the sole staff member.
Yeah, so back to being on your own. I was going to jump ahead to you joining Medhurst Ministries there and saying and subsequently now you're not just looking for workers to come and join you, you're looking for a worker to replace you.
Yes.
I noticed a link on the FIEC pastor's website yesterday for a role. I can put that link on with the podcast for anyone who might be interested in investigating ministry in hard places. But before we get onto your role transfer, why did you join Medhurst? It seems to me that a lot of people who get in touch with Medhurst, it's because they've got no money, they're struggling to fundraise, they're struggling to find people, they're brand new at this type of ministry, they need support and training for ministry in hard places. But when you joined Medhurst, you'd been a pastor for several years, you were pretty good at fundraising, you had a lot of external support, you even had a small staff team. So what was the attraction to join Medhurst as a pastor?
Yeah, I mean several things really. I think the main thing is support. You can't overstate how little we have in common with people in certain other contexts. So it's not that their ministry is bad or wrong or there's any issue with what they're doing. I think there are loads of churches doing brilliant stuff in the communities that they're in that makes sense for their context. It's just they often don't realize how little their models translate to what we're doing, how little their approach to pastoral issues translates to what we're doing, how little their experience has any value really for what we're doing. So someone could come along from a massive church and say, oh, can I come and mentor you or whatever? And you sit there and you go, but what are you going to mentor me in? You don't deal with any of the kind of people we deal with. You don't deal with the daily issues that we deal with. You don't have a church that operates even close to how our church operates. It's not to say they've got nothing to teach you or nothing valuable, but there is just such a massive contextual divide. So I think that's one issue. And that was a big one for us, trying to find other people who understood the issues we were facing that you could just be supporting. Sometimes you just get on with, don't you, what you're given to do. You just crack on with it and you do your best and you give it to the Lord as, lame and badly as you feel that you do it most of the time. It's just very helpful to have some other people there in the same situation going, that's what I did, or yeah, I can't see what else you'd do, or what, do you know what I mean? Or going, oh, I'll do it this way, and you can go, oh, I hadn't thought of that. That kind of thing is really helpful. So I suppose to some degree it was reassurance that I wasn't being a complete moron all of the time, so there was a bit of that. A lot of it's cultural. So, like I said before, I am from a working class background, but my family are like third generation Christians. So my grandfather was the first Christian in my dad's family. And he came from a rough background. His dad was in prison for sort of gambling debts all the time. Do you know what I mean? That kind of thing. So my grandfather became a believer. And then because of that, my dad was brought up in church and his brothers were brought up in church. And because of that, I've been brought up in the church as well. And by God's grace, in my immediate family, obviously my parents are Christians, and then me and all my siblings have become believers, so that's really positive. My life has been split between two places. So Merseyside is one place, and then Oxfordshire is the other place. And I started school in Birkenhead. Do you know what I mean? Which is a really, really white version of Oldham. Do you know what I mean? It's a post-industrial, working class, broadly left behind town that lives in the shadow of a big city. Where I mainly grew up was in a little village in the middle of Oxfordshire that was middle class and well to do and full of educated people who'd all moved into the area to work at the Atomic Energy Authority down the road. So it was a very, very different place. One was rural, one was post-industrial, one was middle class, one was working class. But my family were a working class family in the village. But we went to the church I mainly went to. So as a kid in Birkenhead, we went to a church on a council estate, one of the roughest estates in Birkenhead, called the Ford Estate at the time. It's now called the Beechwood Estate. That's where we went to church there. When we moved down south, we went to a church in Abingdon. Whose fort is Abingdon upon Thames, is its full name. And that's where really posh people live, if they're not even quite posh enough to live in the centre of Oxford. It was a super posh middle class church. Lovely people, and I formed my theology there. I'm very grateful for it. And it was a good, godly place that I'm very grateful for to have had in my life. But it was also clear to me, my family, and there was about two other families in the church who might have been considered from working class sort of backgrounds. That was about it. Everybody else was middle class and just operated differently to us. Now, because I was a Christian and I'd been brought up in church, and because my dad had been brought up in church as well, as I understood it for a lot of my childhood, that was just Christian. That's what Christians do. This is, and therefore, when we go to church, this is how we act, this is how we operate. And he used to, my dad was almost schizophrenic, where at home he'd be one way and then at church he'd be another way. And I didn't think of it as hypocrisy at all. I just thought it was contextual. You go to church and you do these things, and you come home and it's family and you do these things, And I remember having this light bulb moment go on when I was at school, and my school was a rural school. I went to school in Berkshire when I was in secondary school. And it pulled in people across three counties, so it's a massive catchment area. So you saw everybody in that school, they're working class, middle class, everyone. And I just remember seeing mates. And when I went to school, no one admitted to being a Christian. As far as I was aware, no one in my school was a Christian. Certainly you wouldn't have said so if you were, it just wasn't what you did. So I had these mates who were middle class and working class in school. Neither went to church. And I remember, I don't know what it was that prompted it, but I remember seeing my middle class mates going, "Ah, you all operate like we do when we're at church." And my working class mates, like, "You all operate like we do when we're at home." And neither of them were Christians. And I'd always just assumed these guys, the way they operate, that's Christian. But I realized, well, it can't be Christian because they're not. So it's something else. And I wouldn't have had any of the language to describe it or anything. Like, I just remember having this really clarifying moment of, oh, that's not actually a Christian thing. That's just what we do in church, I assume, because that's what everybody else does, and then later realizing actually this is a really middle class, quite posh church, isn't it? And that's it. So I think seeing those things, there was a point to this. Sorry, this is a very rambling answer. My point was, why I joined Medhurst is it was really, really freeing to me to be able to join something where there were people who operated naturally like I did, and thought in the way I thought, at least to some degree. I'm not saying we think the same things about everything, but culturally we sort of like push in the same direction, you know what I mean? And thinking, and I don't know, there was, for me, there was something so incredibly freeing about that, where I'd spent my life feeling like I was going to church and wearing a bit of a straitjacket. Do you know what I mean? And since I went to university and stuff, I learned to navigate it a little bit. But at the same time, I went to university in Liverpool, and there were loads of working class people who go to the local university. Do you know, bright lads who've done well and go. And Liverpool, even though lots of people in Liverpool aren't working class, they're middle class people who live there, Liverpool is fundamentally a working class city with a working class psyche, if you know what I mean. So there were people there who didn't think unlike we did. Do you know what I mean? And that, you learn when you move in those waters how to navigate it. Do you know what I mean? So I just learned how to navigate church, learned how to navigate university. And I don't think you quite realize what a straitjacket it is where you're there. And you're constantly having to check yourself, constantly having to change yourself, constantly having to think differently about how you act and speak and behave, because actually that's just not what we do here. And so to be in something like Medhurst, where there are people who you don't have to do that, do you know what I mean? You don't have to check yourself, because people understand you and understand your mindset a little bit and understand how you operate a little bit. That was massive to me. That was freeing for me in a way that I don't think I've ever experienced anywhere else in church. So I'd say they're probably the two biggest things. It was support, understanding our situation, and just that freeing nature of it. And then I suppose one of the byproducts of that was really good for us was as you say, we'd already got workers, we'd already got a bit of funding, we'd already got a bit of support, and I've long had a desire to see working class areas served with gospel preaching churches and working class people trained. And I thought, well, we've managed to do this. I want to be able to help some other people do this as well. I want to be able to help them, particularly if they, the one thing I had in my background was I was churched. And I'm sure we might talk about what being working class actually is in a bit, but what I had was being churched, and what that did is give me a big social network that gave me access to a whole load of stuff that I just wouldn't have had access to. And I thought, when I meet other working class people who aren't churched, but they've become believers and now they're in the church, they don't have that network that I have, and I wanted to be able to use some of that to support them so that they then didn't have those difficulties and they could start with that freedom of culture that I never had. And then they can not have the problems of not being able to get the funding and not being able to get the support and being able to have that help. So I wanted to be able to use some of what I had, which wasn't and still isn't a lot, but I wanted to be able to use even the bit that I had to support them. So we actually then took on a few Medhurst churches as partners and then supported them.
Awesome. Yeah, it's when you were chatting there, I just had a little picture in my head. So, so what is it that makes the support and the encouragement so culturally simple for you? How is it that you can't you fit in with the pastors who were part of Medhurst? Because I know everyone's not sat there in a string vest and like a handkerchief tied on their head and sat there in the Union Jack shorts drinking Skol Lager at the retreats.
Some of them are, aren't they?
just me, but yeah. So we've had middle class speakers come and lead our retreats. In fact, most of the speakers are middle class, and a lot of the pastors who were part of Medhurst churches are middle class as well. So what particular things made it culturally relevant for you, being part of
Yeah,
Medhurst?
so I think there's a couple of things, aren't there? So, funnily enough, actually, so if you take our church as the mirror image of it, right? So, we had some working class people in our church and some ethnic minorities in our church. Middle class people were in a minority in our church when I came there, but it was still dominated by the middle class culture. Know what I mean? Now, I would say Medhurst was the inverse of that, where whilst there was a lot of middle class people in it, it wasn't dominated by the middle class culture. So I think, and that just makes a huge difference to how things operate and how you're heard and how you're seen and how you can engage with stuff. So I think that was one thing. I think the pastors you do have are working in deprived communities. So to some degree, they're in Medhurst, aren't they? Either because they want to be able to reach those people better and are trying to not assimilate to that culture, but try to be more accessible to that culture, even if they're not from it, which helps because it means that they are making moves towards working class culture rather than saying, trying to drag working class people into a middle class way of thinking. And again, I think that impacts on the culture because you don't then have a set of middle class people pushing really hard to say, we've got to have these values and these ways of thinking front and center at everything we do. So I think that makes a big difference to how things run and how things operate. And I think, to be honest, I suspect some of the middle class people would say this. It's because it's not dominated by middle class culture. I think the most stymieing thing about middle class culture that I've always hated is judgment. It's a judgmental culture that I loathe and I've always hated. The reason why middle class people are so buttoned up when they talk to you and why they're so careful in how they speak to you is because they're so terrified of offending you, because offending people is the worst thing you could possibly do, because then you'll get judged for it and then we'll all feel awkward, and awkwardness is the worst sin of all. And to be in a culture that's not dominated by that is very freeing. And I think actually you'll find a lot of middle class people, particularly if they come from a family background that's not 2.4 children, brought up in the church all their life, know all how to behave and all of that sort of stuff. They come from a non-conventional family background of some sort, even if they're middle class themselves. I think they come in and they go, I feel like I've been judged all my life in the church, and here I don't have to be. Do you know what I mean? And I think that's huge. I suppose at a minimum, it's that, isn't it? A lack of judgment, which is really freeing, and actually, I think far more gospel centered and gospel oriented than an awful lot of what you get in frankly what I consider quite oppressive, judgmental churches.
Yeah. That's good. That's interesting to hear that. I've not really considered that before. Yeah, that's encouraging to hear. And again, I think what's also been encouraging is, especially at our pastors' retreats, we've invited a lot of pastors from Medhurst, and occasionally there's some spare room, so I'll invite pastors from other networks to join us. We had a couple of guys from Grace Baptist down south, and it always seems to be the guys who I invite from down south from different networks is the first thing they can't believe is they don't have to wear a shirt and tie. A few people have brought their night clothes, and they were so relieved that they could just hang out in the shorts and t-shirts all day and just chill and relax. And the other thing was that our retreats are actually that a retreat. So although we do have teaching, we just have two lots of teaching throughout the day. And most of the day is just hanging out, eating good food, sitting in the hot tub, chatting with one another, and building friendships. And what I found, from both the women's retreats that I've had the feedback from and the men's retreats, the men and the women who were used to middle class run retreats go back exhausted from those retreats and don't have very much time to build friendships. And we're shocked that there wasn't a 6 o'clock in the morning prayer meeting, and the first talk wasn't till lunchtime. So, yeah, getting the lie in as well. Have you found that kind of emphasis on building friendships and relaxation helpful?
Yeah, I mean, so for me, I'll be honest, I have, but I went knowing I had friends there already. Do you know what I mean? So for me, it was a bit different. I probably wouldn't have gone if I didn't already have friends there. So I built the friendships and then went. So that was just me. Do you know what I mean? But I think it is absolutely true. I don't think I've ever gone to a conference or a overnight or whatever and come away with new friends that I didn't have before. Do you know what I mean? I just because that and to be honest, they're not set up for that. And even the ones that claim that they are interested in that don't really, you know, the most they do is they go, oh, we put you on a round table over tea, and then you'll be best mates at the end of that. And to me, that's like every wedding that you ever attend, which, if I'm honest, is like hell on earth for me. I can't stick it.
Oh, class.
Whereas what I like is I built my mates, and some of them were there. Not, I didn't know everybody, but and some of them were there, and I went, and then they could hang out with me mates, and you could welcome these other guys in to our friendship group that was already there, and you get to know them, and they become part of your friendship group. And I just think a broadly relaxed atmosphere there, and again, it's that non-judgmental atmosphere I think allows for that a little bit, you know, in a way that you don't get it in other conferences. You're either in teaching the whole time, or you skip the teaching and sort of feel a bit guilty that you're not really making the best use of it because you're meant to be there for the teaching, you know, or whatever. And a lot of the time, again, you go for the teaching and you're like, this isn't necessarily relevant to my context anyway, or just doesn't speak my language, you know. And that's not necessarily people's fault who are leading it or planning it. It's just that's the culture they've come from and the context they've come from, and it just doesn't work for me. So what I think probably the thing, I don't know whether I should say this or not, but I'm going to. I think the thing I probably value the least about Medhurst is the teaching that you get on on the retreat, and that's not because it's bad. It's just because it's, you know, it's the bit that's not the most important for me. Do you know what I mean? I'm relatively self, what's the word? Self, not self-teaching, but you know what I mean. I'll find the teaching.
Yourself.
I'll find the stuff that I need. I'll find the input that I need. You know what I mean? And I'm quite happy with that. What I can't do by myself and for myself is make friends. You know, you can't have friends sat in a room on your own, and it's very hard to make friends about a shared context where people are one upping each other, or people are judgmental about what other people are doing, or people just don't understand what you're doing or don't get what you're doing, or you speak in ways that You don't even know why, but they seem to get upset with you all the time because of the things that you say, and you just think you're being friendly, and they think you'd be, you're saying, that's just wearing, isn't it? Do you know what I mean? And tiring. And I don't think I ever come away from stuff. I'm quite self-critical of myself as well, so I very often come away annoyed with myself. I've said a load of things and done a load of things because I was trying to be friendly, and I seem to have just upset everybody. Whereas I didn't get that in Medhurst, you know what I mean? I feel that's, I don't know whether that's just down to the shared context or it's down to people moving towards more towards a working class mindset, trying to reach across that a little bit in that direction. So they're a little bit more understanding of people like me who just say nonsense all the time
Class.
yeah. That sort of thing, but I don't know. That's what I value anyway. It's the camaraderie, the relationships, and the culture that I think.
Brilliant. So, yeah, you were one of the founding members of Medhurst, and
Was
you,
I?
and you've
No.
been a trustee of Medhurst for several years. And then I saw an interesting article on your blog announcing your time at Alden Bethel was coming to an end.
Ooh.
And I had a little chat with you after. Speaking with the trustees, I'd shared that I had a need for more employers. We took employees. We took Gary on to be the regional director for the Midlands. But I also needed some help as the ministry was growing. I was the jack of all trades. My tasks were getting too high. Lots of things on the to-do list were staying at the bottom of the pile and never getting dealt with. And I'd created a role of director of communications would have been helpful to work alongside me, and then you'd handed in your notice, and I thought that would be wonderful if you'd be interested in basically sharing the knowledge that you'd had over the last 12 years, if you'd be able to come and use your experience to serve other churches in Medhurst. And you've agreed to come on board. And hopefully you'll be starting in September. So share a little bit about what attracted you to applying for the role within Medhurst, and what you think you can bring to the team.
I mean, I'm ultimately unemployable. So somebody going, I'll give you a job, seemed quite attractive. But I think one of the main things, really, like I said earlier, I've got a genuine heart for seeing people like me brought into the church. Do you know what I mean? It's quite pointed. You don't see people who dress and talk and think and act like me in the church. And even less so when you go, I mean, I didn't grow up on a council estate. I grew up in sort of old fashioned working class. Do you know what I mean? But yeah, you don't see many people from council estates on in churches, and you really don't see that many people unless you're running a food bank or some sort of outreach to homeless people. You don't see people who are even sort of what you might call underclass, you know what I mean, in the church either. And so I've always been keen on that. I think anyone who's followed my blogs and things like that will know it's a real thing that I think is vitally important for us as a church in the UK. I think it's something that's been like a 150-year-old problem at least. And I don't think we're getting better at it. I think that we are getting worse at it. I want to see more churches planted, and I want to see the churches that are there supported well. And I feel like having had 12 years of experience in a hard area with a very mixed congregation from all over the world, but particularly trying to push a more working class culture. I'm not saying a working class dominant culture, but just trying to make an equal space for it. Now, I was able to do that to some degree as the pastor. Do you know what I mean? But as a member, I don't think I'd have been in any position to do that. And I think that's been good. It's made and interesting making more space for working class cultures also help make more space for other cultures as well, because you just become aware, don't you, of different cultures in general and want to make space for them. So I want to be able to help churches do that. I want them to be intercultural and genuinely mixed in their culture, not just working class, but also ethnic minority as well. So joining Medhurst, I felt like I could give something to that. I think, like we said earlier, one of the biggest issues that I know I had, and I'm aware you had when you were minister in Middlesbrough, is funding. And I feel like if I can just take some of that away from ministers, like when 50% of your time, I know most pastors talk about being busy, do you know what I mean? But when 50% of your time is on fundraising, and then people expect you to do every other part of pastoral ministry that other people just do 100% of their time on, if I can take that 50% off them so they can spend more time in their community, more time with their people, more time in the word, I would do that all day long. Do you know what I mean? I want to help people do that. One of the ways I think I can do that, as you alluded to before, I've built up a partnership with all sorts of different people, all sorts of different churches and individuals, and I want to be able to help others do that. I want to be able to connect people up, and I want to be able to link them up and build partnerships. So one of my roles with Medhurst isn't just going to be communications, but it's going to be communications and partnerships, and a bit of focus on training as well, because I think they're the areas that I've got good track record in using for the benefit of our church, and I want to be able to use them now, not just for our church in Oldham, but for all the churches that are in the Medhurst network.
And you just briefly mentioned training there. Training is something that we've been doing really well with the women, and I've been trying to set up some training for the men over the last couple of years, but just time hasn't been available for me to do that well. Ragged School of Theology asked if we'd be interested in setting up a hub a couple of years ago. We were unable to just for capacity. So part of the job spec, when I was creating a job spec, I was looking at how can we get the Ragged School of Theology to have a hub in the north of England. And praise God, that was put into the job spec. And yeah, you'll be running one of the hubs for us from September alongside help and support fundraising. But again, another thing which is helpful is since I only travel abroad by ship and I won't get on a plane. You're also, as part of your role as communications and partnerships, will be helping to develop our existing relationships and create some new ones with churches and Christians in the US, hopefully to bring out gospel workers to serve in some of our churches, but also bring some financial partnerships to our churches and the ministry as well. So, yeah, so I think you're due out there in September, aren't you, to the US with the
Yep.
ATC
So
conference?
I think one of the benefits of having been through university and all of that sort of thing, and now clearly being very middle class, is I can run a hub for Ragged School with my degrees. and I can try and talk the middle class language that will make people listen a little bit more to what we're doing. But yeah, so I think that some of that background's been really helpful in order to sort of segue into doing that stuff. I think going over to the States and building partnerships, so we've done a little bit of that ourselves already. I mean, I've only been to the US once in my life, and it wasn't to build any partnerships particularly, even though I spent like 10 days in the basement of a church the whole time. But
Yeah,
yeah.
voluntarily, let me add, it was voluntary.
I was invited, and no one chained me to anything. That's true. Sorry, I was going to say something else then. Yeah, that's out. But I am good. Yeah, I think we have got partnerships in America already for our church, and we've managed to build those up. And it being able to go out and sort of build upon some of those, and I'm hoping to be able to tap in even to some of those relationships that I've made already, and then see if they can link us up with other people locally, and then we can build relationships for other churches in again in the network. I think, you don't want to be crass about it, but the fact is the American church just has a lot more money than the UK church, and for them, what's considered to be a bit of support is for us massive, and funds are a huge amount of what we do. And then on top of that, I just think, and this is where I think it should be a shame for the UK church, really, is that the American church is willing to do that. The American, I think it should be shameful that we have to go over to America to get support, because we just can't get it from UK churches. And what we do get from UK churches, just it doesn't touch the sides. And I think we are very quick and very happy and very able to fund, £2 million building projects for a new church, but then we can't find 50 quid a month for supporting a pastor down the road. I think that's the sort of thing that concerns me. Churches that can drop 80 grand so that it can fit in a new extension to fit in 20 new chairs into their church, and yet the pastor down the road who needs a salary for 3 years that would cover. You can't get that's where I think it's a shame. And I'd love to build more partnerships in the UK with churches that see that and go, do you know what, we won't have that extension, we will support that church. I want to be able to build those partnerships, but I'm also, looking more internationally to see if we can build partnerships abroad as well, and see who is willing to support us from overseas. Because you're like B.A. Baracus, aren't you? And you're not going to do it.
I ain't getting on no flight, fool. Yeah. Oh, brilliant. Cheers, Steve. Yeah, well, your role is a self-funded role, so you are currently trying to raise finances to start your role in September. So again, I'll put a link to the stewardship page underneath this podcast. Yeah, and also I'll be putting that in a newsletter soon. So if anybody out there would like to support Steve's role, Medias in general, or one of our churches, please go to our website, www.medhurst.org, medhurstministries.org, sorry, and also visit Steve's blog, Building Jerusalem. Is that .com?
Dot blog.
Dot blog, buildingjerusalem.blog, and I'm sure there'll be links there. So you'll be able to support them through that. But also, don't just go there. Go there because there'll be some really good articles as well, and a link to this podcast. Oh, brilliant, Steve! Thank you very much for joining me on the In Context podcast.
Cheers, Ian.
Thank you, brother.